Welcome to the Two Geeks and a Microphone podcast, your one-stop shop for television, movie, video games, comic books, book reviews, and more. Now, without further ado, here's Steven and Mike. And here we go for another great episode of Two Geeks and a Microphone. Hey, everybody, welcome. It is so great to have you with us today. We are pumped about today because Mike, once again, as always, has connected us with a wonderful special guest today. I'm excited about this because, Mike, you introduced me to some of his work. And not only was I in stitches, but I'm also amazed at what a talented artist he is. So, Mike, will you please introduce for us who our guest is today?
Oh, yeah. And just to start off, good morning to all you geeks out there in geekdom land. I can't say it again.
That's a couple of episodes in a row you've had a tough time.
I know. I'm getting like tongue-tied. I don't know what's going on. All right. Anyway, we got a great guest. His name is Mark Anthony Austin, and he is none other than Boba Fett himself, the bounty hunter, the one, the awesome. Welcome, Mark. Thank you. Yay.
Glad to be here.
Thank you so much.
Yeah. So it was funny because Mike first started off. He goes, "You'll never guess who I got to get on the show." I'm like, I'm thinking, okay, well, all right. Who do you have on the show and stuff like that? He goes, "I got Boba Fett." I'm like, what? And then my first, of course, I'm sure you get this all the time. Now wait, which Boba Fett is it?
Yeah. Right.
Yeah. All the time.
I mean, how many actors have played Boba Fett? So we've got
seven.
Seven?
I mean, more or less seven. It was before, but now with the Mandalorian and all the stuntmen, because you know that's not Tamura in the
right.
I'd be impressed if it was, but all the stuntmen, there must be like according to Aaron, who was the Boba Fett fan club owner. Whatever, he runs it. He said that there's about between 3 and 5 new Boba Fetts. So it's getting crowded in here.
are you saying there's not enough room in the Slave One for all of you?
Well, I'm in the movie Slave One.
Okay.
So they're in the TV Slave One. We're in the movie Slave One.
Okay.
It makes it a bit less of a crowd thing. Yeah, the movie Fets.
And I am calling it the Slave One. I don't care what Disney says.
I'm calling it the Slave One forever.
All right.
So, okay. So, Mark, you know, as I stated before show, I want to let people know where they can find you on the internet. How, you know, what's some of the latest projects you've been working on and that you want to bring attention to?
Well, you can find me. I go under the moniker Boba Fett A-N-H-S-E, A New Hope Special Edition.
Okay.
So you can find me on Twitter. You can find me on Instagram or under Mark Austin, but usually Boba Fett A-N-H-S-E, and that goes for my YouTube channel as well, except the YouTube channel is a bit different because you've got spaces. Boba, space, Fett, space, A-N-H-S-C.
Okay.
latest projects. I just finished in December working on an animated feature for Netflix called Back to the Outback. And okay. I think that's going to be streaming the end of this year. But it's a really charming movie about animals in Australia wanting to escape the zoo and get back to the outback or their home.
Oh, cool.
And then this year and half of next year, I'm working on Ultraman.
Whoa,
Ultraman,
wow.
Made in Japan.
Yeah. Oh, cool.
So, yeah, we're it's really looking good already. We're only 2 screens in out of 5 and it already looks good. You know, it's kind of like, Imagine Ultraman, as you remember Ultraman, but mixed with Spider-Verse, and okay. You get something like the movie we've got.
Oh my gosh, I got to watch this.
Yeah, that's well, I finish next June, July, but then, you know, I prep everything for ILM to finish.
Okay.
Okay.
So they took all my rough and they make it look wonderful, and that's their job. So I used to be on that end. Now I give the work to ILM.
That's cool.
But yeah, I finish in June or July next year, so I'm guessing cool. It'll be probably like 8 months, maybe a year after that that we'll see. So a long time to wait, unfortunately.
Yeah, well, I do want to clarify for our listeners that may not realize this, but not only are you the guy behind the mask in the New Hope Special Edition for Boba Fett, but you are a very talented VFX artist, right?
Well, I do VFX, yeah. Very talented. Well,
And for our audio listeners, he's over here rubbing his hand on his shoulder.
Polishing the nails.
Polishing the nails. And,
I love it.
Have you seen my IMDb?
I have not looked at it.
You should check out my IMDb. Look up Mark Anthony Austin, because I had to combine them. IMDb split me into two. They had a page for Mark Austin, and they had a page for Mark Anthony Austin. It took them years to say, it's the same person. It's the same person. So those movies should go in one list. And they finally made it into one list. So I do have to update it, but it's almost updated. Mm-hmm. But you can kind of see a kind of a sampling of the movies I've worked on.
Nice.
In VFX. Yeah. A few.
We love doing research on the fly, because we'll pull it right up and take a look. You know, Alan Fling was the same situation, I think. When we talked with him, his IMDb page, there was the side of where he had done some acting work, but he does a lot of costume design work. And that's really what, you know, he was doing and what was known for and stuff.
Right. So now, I just noticed something, Mark.
Yeah.
When you said your name, I heard Anthony.
Yeah.
Not Anthony. Is that correct?
Yeah, I always pronounce Anthony, because my mother used to be, my mother loved Mark Anthony, like the Roman Mark Anthony.
Okay.
Like that name.
Because, you know, Anthony Daniels, that's the way he pronounces it also.
Oh, really? It must be a British thing. It must be a British thing.
That's what I was just wondering. Since you said it, I heard that, and I'm like, I guess this is a British thing then.
I don't know anyone that pronounced it with a TH from England. Yeah, it might be a British thing.
Interesting. So we might have just learned something on the podcast. I love it. That's awesome.
Me included.
Yeah. So how did you end up getting the role of Boba Fett in the special edition?
That's a long story. How long we got? How many hours do we have? I think you did the condensed.
Yeah, give us the Reader's Digest version.
The Reader's Digest, right. So I'm working at ILM already. I'm working on a movie called Casper.
I saw Casper.
Yeah, I was the character supervisor for Casper. And so I'm working on that movie. And I'm, through a friend of mine, I get hooked up with the guy who runs the archives, Mr. Don Bees, who also is a Boba Fett.
Cool.
From Return of the Jedi Special Edition. He jumped in the suit because I left. I wasn't available. Otherwise, I would have been in that movie as well. But he hooked me up with Don Bees. Don Bees ran the archives, which was off limits to all of ILM employees. You know, you weren't allowed to go there. But he got me the hookup, and I had a free pass to take, you know, people came into town, I could take them to the archives. And I just wanted to go to the archives to see the suit. You know, there's loads of cool stuff, don't get me wrong. It's like a museum of all Star Wars memorabilia. But, you know, I just wanted to see, I wanted to see this guy, you know, I wanted to see Boba Fett. So he takes me over to his table. He goes, oh, we actually have all the suit out on the table. So whenever, just pouring it. I have pictures online of me when I first saw the suit. I never dreamt anything. How did you top touching the real suit. I mean, I didn't think that could be topped.
Oh, I would have been freaking out.
It was, yeah. There's a lot of other cool things I could tell you about on the same visit to the archives, but I'll keep it on track.
We squirrel all the time, so it's okay.
Well, I was putting on the Indiana Jones jacket and hat. Oh, I was sitting cool. in the land speeder. I sat in the land speeder.
Nice.
I was looking inside Kenny Baker's R2-D2 with all the stuff plastered around the outside, which I won't talk about. And, you know, I got to see the suit. And so, that was my – I had this kind of direct line to the archives.
Yeah.
So they've been considering doing a re-release of the original movies before they ever start thinking about doing the prequels. They want to run the movies one more time for the new generation of fans.
Those ads, because the ads were see the original one last time. Yeah.
Yeah.
Fantastic ads, so, too.
Yeah. And so they made these trailers, these ads, and what they decided to do is they decided to invite all the license holders to Skywalker Sound at Skywalker Ranch and show them the trailers, get them all hyped up, so all pumped, you know, oh, what can we do with our merchandise, you know?
Right.
And just at the height, the pinnacle of their pumpedness, they had this idea they was going to have stormtroopers come down the theater, like either side, like march in, surrounding them, and turn and be all standing and all intimidating. And then you hear that, and then Darth Vader comes out and he's like, "We'll be honored if you would join us," you know, something like that. And they all go off to have a nice little soiree, drinky poo, right? So that was the idea. So Don put an email out to all of ILM. Who wants to be a stormtrooper? A silly thing to do. It's like if you put that on social media.
Right.
Anyone like to be a stormtrooper?
Don't
do that. Yeah, you just don't do that. I don't know how many replies they got, but they got in excess of 120, 150 volunteers. Wow. Something ridiculous like that. And they were, oh my God, we only needed 12 or something. So
how did they not think that they weren't going to get that many responses?
Maybe they thought, you know, because they'd have to volunteer their time and drive all the way to the archives. But I mean, if you're a fan, that's nothing.
Right.
So anyway, so they got a big response and they decided, oh, we can make this actually a bigger event than we originally planned. We'll still do the same thing, but when they go for the drink, instead of it just being a bar, let's make the canteen a bar for Mos Eisley.
Oh my gosh.
They made the bar with all the heads and then the IG-88 heads, everything behind the bar, and the bartender was there but serving real drinks as well as, you know.
Now, was it the actual guy?
No.
But
he was dressed as that guy.
Okay.
So they didn't have any actual guys. It was all volunteers.
Sure.
But
how fun.
But they said, you know, Don called me up and I was like, yes, I've got my Stormtrooper gig. And he said, I know you wanted to be a Stormtrooper. And my heart dropped. Ah, maybe I'm not tall enough. Maybe I'm like Luke.
You know?
I must be a little short to be a Stormtrooper. Right? So my heart sank. And he goes, you know, he told me about the response and the bigger idea. And he goes, there's a character. He said, there's a character that you might be interested in. And I'm like, oh, my God, what? And he goes, I wouldn't build your hopes up. And my heart sank again. So he said, everything fits to this one flight suit. You know, the flight suit is a Swedish Air Force flight suit that's underneath everything else. He said, if you don't fit the flight suit, then you can't, we'll find you an equally cool other character like that existed in my universe.
Yeah, yeah. There's so, no equally cool character to Boba Fett.
Not in my universe, no.
I agree with you.
So so he said, if you come along one lunchtime. So I went the following lunchtime. I just, okay, I'll do it tomorrow. So I went there, and that zipper going up was like a Cinderella slipper moment. It was like God rays coming through the... It was inside, but there were God rays coming through from the sky, and angels singing. And
did your fairy godmother show up?
My fairy fat mother did, yeah.
Yeah, fairy fat mother.
Yeah. So anyway, so I'm in the flight suit, and I thought, oh my God, this is amazing. It can't get any better than this. I said it again. He said, well, while you're here, let's try it. Just make sure we have all the pieces. So I was like, sure. So I was like, Iron Man. They were like, Nelson Hall and Don B's like cladding me in this armor.
Right.
And once they had all the pieces on, they took Poloids from the front side. You know, so they had something to give, four Poloids to give the dresser for this event for the evening. So they had Poloids, and they had a list of all the pieces. And so I did this event. So it's 4 hours in the suit, pretending to be Boba Fett, kind of Disneyland style. You weren't allowed to talk. It sure. All had to be pantomime. But at one point, someone said, you see that guy over there? He's the president or one high up in Kenna. We'd like you to go over and arrest him. And chuck him out. He's a troublemaker. So I went up and nodded. You know. He went off. So I went over to the guy. You know, and it's fun just walking through the other aliens because they all play their roles. As I walked past, they all went like kind of like this. And they're all like in character. It was amazing. Oh, it was like this was the best. Sorry,
they were shrieking back as you walked by.
It was like the best VR experience game, except you could touch everything. Everything was real, you know? And everything was through this tiny visor, so it looked completely real. You know, you didn't see the curtains. You didn't see the dry ice machine. You know, you didn't see the seams in the set. There was the band in the corner. And all the aliens.
I love it.
So I weaved my way through the tables and tapped the guy on the shoulder, and he turned around, and I was like, I got his arm, put it behind his back.
Let's go.
And I walked him through the crowd and to the door, and then released him. And he's like, oh, he goes, you've got to come back. So I walked over to the Kenner guys, and he said, he goes, if you don't mind, can you just stand there for a minute? He goes, because when we did the original action figure, we messed up the rangefinder. And so we quickly kind of molded it onto the helmet last minute.
Oh, my gosh.
As his front piece. Because we messed up. He goes, could you just stand there? We want to get it right. We're about to release another. It was the Power of the Force figures they were talking about.
Okay.
But you had to be freaking out, man.
Right?
Yeah.
I'm always thinking, how can it get better than this? And this happens, you know?
Right. Wow.
So the guys, they had cigarette packets in their shirt pockets. They opened up the cigarette box, dumped the cigarettes in, opened up the packet, grabbed a big marker and started drawing and sketching. And I just had to stand there kind of still while they drew all the details they messed up.
Wow.
So it was for that. The Power of the Force.
Yeah, yeah. Those
C-3PO. Yeah, right. C-3PO with pecs, you know. Right. Which is a shame, but still, I have a connection to the Power of the Force.
I've come to have an appreciation for that line. I didn't used to like that line. I'm more of a vintage collector.
Yeah, yeah,
I prefer the originals. In fact, I got the re-release. This was the new re-release. I've got that one right here, Boba Fett. Actually, I've got all of the Mandalorian sitting right here. But I've come to really appreciate that line now. There's a uniqueness to it. It's not my favorite, but there's some fun stuff in that line, actually.
I do love the Black Series, though. I mean, if I had the Black Series as a kid, I would have lost my mind.
Oh, yeah, of course.
The Black Series, just, oh, my God. That's all I wanted, was to make them just a bit bigger when I was a kid. I understand for the size. Oh, nice. Bad Bane.
Yes. My other favorite.
Maybe my den.
Yeah.
I really loved the original series, but if I had had the Black series, I understand for the spaceship ratio, you know, because I'm one of the best things about me and Boba Fett that I never foresee is having making friends of my heroes, and one of my heroes is Jim Swearingen, who designed the original toys.
Okay.
And so he and I are really good friends now. We talk all the time.
Oh, cool.
But yeah, just all his stories about, you know, the things they had to try and that. So I completely love with the original series, and even more so through knowing Jim. Wait, I'm off track.
Sorry,
off
track. Sorry.
I'm at the thing. They're drawing me for the
I went to eBay and I went to look at the Power of the Force figures and also the new 300 special edition action Boba Fett figures.
Oh, I love this. My favorite one, the 300.
Yeah, where he's, yes.
I got that one hanging up on my wall.
It's like I have.
Go ahead.
I have the prototype of that figure.
Oh,
not the test shot. Not the test shot. Test shots come after the prototype.
Right.
The prototypes are, they're not even jointed the same way. They're held together with pegs and they're hard purple resin.
Oh, nice.
And I have all of it except for the backpack and cape.
Okay.
But I have all the rest of it.
Right.
Missing the backpack, the jetpack, and the cape.
Oh, my gosh. I'm so jealous.
A 300 figure. That's. As soon as I got it on eBay, this is like going back, I don't know how many years, like 90s. As soon as I got it, I managed to get the $700 from someone in Hong Kong. And as soon as I got it, someone offered me $2,500 for it. I'm like, nope, sorry. That's one of my prized possessions. But.
I bet. Nice. That is awesome. Nice.
But I'm in Lucasfilm.
Okay.
Yes, okay. Yeah, let's get back to this.
They're drawing me.
Right.
Yeah, anyway, this whole event happened, but this isn't the blue screen shoot. This is just an event for promotion.
Okay.
And it was such a success that they asked if all of us would come back and do a second one. And so obviously I'm just like, of course.
Right.
So I had 8 hours practicing.
Oh, no, thank you. I didn't have any fun.
Yeah, no. Actually, they had to drag me off. They had to drag me off for legal reasons. They said, you have to have at least a 5-minute break in this 4 hours. No. And they're dragging me off like a school kid, like,
I don't want to go.
Yeah, I'm sitting there, like, drinking water, sitting there with a helmet, waiting to go back in. Can I go? Yeah, can I go? Okay. Back in.
Right.
So, having done those two summits, when they needed someone for the blue screen shoot, obviously, you know, someone said, oh, there's a guy that works here that just did that. And so I was working at my desk, as I said, working on Casper, and this guy comes up really just before like knocking off time. And Balcom comes up. His name's Carl Miller. He was a cameraman for ILM. And he said, I don't know if you know, but they're looking for somebody to jump in the Boba Fett suit for a blue screen shoot. You should tell them that you did those summits recently.
Right.
I said, well, I don't know who to tell. He goes, well, you just email Tom Kennedy. He's the ILM producer for New Hope Special Edition. I'm like, what? New Hope what?
Yeah.
Special what? Oh, I never told you anything. And he went off.
Now he comes to you while you're working on Casper. How do you work the rest of the day?
That was the end of the day. Like it was the end of the day.
Oh, okay. All right. Yeah. All right.
But still, it messed me up. So I wrote to Tom Kennedy. I sent him an email saying, you know, a little bird told me that blah, 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 blah. I happened to fit the suit. I just did the summit at the ranch. Sent it off. I got a response. How the hell did you hear about this? I demand to know who told you this, that, and the other. And really angry. Like, oh, shoot. I've blown it.
Right.
And then 2 weeks later, Steve Williams, Steve Spaz Williams, came by and said, "Oh, has anyone told you yet?" Oh, what? They said, "You're going to be in the suit." And I'm like, "But he "Oh, no one's told you?" "Oh, well, they will." And he left. So I was like, "That was the worst. That was the worst when it wasn't official."
Right. Yep.
So I didn't know if I could tell anyone because it wasn't official. So I didn't tell anyone and then it not be. But that was the worst time. Either that or waiting between 1994 and 1997 to see the results of that shoot. Wow. That was a long, long 2 years.
Wow. I'll bet. Oh, my gosh.
That's how it happened, though. That's how it happened.
That's a fantastic story. I love it. That is great. Oh my gosh. So you got to be in the suit and then you even got to be kind of a model for the action figure. I mean, that's a dream come true in itself.
Yeah. Wow. And then it just so happened that you know, this whole thing about the special edition was buzzing. You know, everyone was buzzing about it. Everyone was just buzzing. Special edition. That's all we heard. Special edition, this, that, and that.
Right.
So, you know, because people were buzzing and asking about it, you know, suddenly people came up with, "Oh, they're only looking for two animators." I'm like, "Really? How many shots are they going to do?" "Well, they're looking for two guys." I thought, there's no way I'm going to get chosen. And then it went down to one animator because John Knoll came in and said, "I'm going to do all the spaceship shots for the special edition, by the way. But I don't know how to animate creatures, so someone else is going to have to do those." And so it went to one slot. And then I was finishing on Casper, and I was going up to HR. And I really thought I was going up to HR to find all the details for my flight back to England, you know, because my contract was finished.
Sure.
It was like 18-month contract for Casper, and it was finished.
Okay.
I was expecting to go home, so I went up to HR, and some HR lady, she was like, "Oh, we have you written down. We have you down here as full time staff." I went, "Really?" I said, "Because I was just for the one contract, wasn't I?" He goes, "Well, we've got you down to full time staff, and you're one of the animators on New Hope Special Edition." What? So I got to animate all the Dubaks and Lontos and Scurriers.
Nice.
I got to animate the fake Stormtroopers and Jawas and speeder bikes and droids and anything that wasn't a spaceship.
But right.
Except for Jabba. Jabba was done by Steve Williams, who was the guy that told me about getting the role. And Steve Williams actually directed the blue screen shoot because George said he might turn up, but he never did. I was really disappointed because I hadn't met him at that point. I didn't meet him until I got to do the creature animation, and that's when I got to really work with George. But
does that mean you worked on yourself? Did you do any of the? Did you have to do any of the blue screen edits or anything off of?
No, because I was an animator back then. This is before I became a special effects person like I am now. Now I can do all that stuff.
Gotcha.
Now I can do a rough version of the effects. So my kind of job when I'm not working on an animated feature right now.
Uh-huh.
But normally I've just kind of returned to animated features when I went to Netflix. But for 10-11 years from 2009 to 2019, sorry.
Uh-huh.
I was doing VFX. So I was working out the VFX. It's called previs or previsualization.
Right.
Okay. Where you work out the effects and postvis is called as well. Where you're basically working at the cinematography for all the most expensive sequences in a movie. So that,
okay,
you know, movie making is a very expensive business and it involves an army of people. So imagine if you have an army of people hanging around on the set and the guy's like, what can we do for this shot? You know, you don't ever want to have that situation because that just is a money drain.
Right.
And so for the most expensive shots, like the battle sequence in Avengers, we had to work out every shot, the height of the camera, the lens, where the camera was, the distance from the actor, give them all that information so they could say, okay, in this shot, we only need him, this distance from the camera, this is the camera, this is what it's going to look like. these separate tracks. You give them all the information as a blueprint so they can just set it all up and replicate your virtual version of that shot.
So do you start off with like storyboards then?
Yes.
Okay.
And storyboards, I mean, I love storyboards, but storyboards, you can very easily take liberties with a storyboard.
Okay.
You take liberties with scale, especially with regards to a camera and its lens.
Gotcha. Mm-hmm.
You can take liberties with, you know, just the composition. They have three characters lined up. And if you line them up in reality, maybe they won't look like the storyboard, you know.
Oh, so you have to play with cheat. It a
little bit more. You either have to cheat, but you have to ask, do you want me to cheat or do you want me to make this real? You know, you want to make it true to perspective.
Uh-huh.
And the rule of thumb for 99% of the time is to make something that isn't a CG camera. You know, the cameras that are doing stuff that no cameraman can represent.
Right, right.
You know, like an impossible camera move, like flies out of the sky and ends up driving, you know, one of those kind of ones. We try and steer away from those. So I set up, you know, I make my dolly tracks I try and work everything out so they can just set it up as I've and reproduce what I've given them. And I've worked with the director to the point where I'm giving them exactly what the director wants. Mm-hmm. So they want to replicate that, you know, 100%. So usually when you see my rough versus the final, it's frame for frame, more or less, you know.
Nice. Nice.
But much of that you've gotten from the director already. So it's not like you're saying, well, here's what it needs to be.
No, but sometimes the directors aren't as involved. And that's why you never see the previews on the DVD releases. I think Hollywood doesn't want people to realize how much creative input I have over, you know, a Joss Whedon film.
Oh.
You know? It's a Joss Whedon film, but...
Aaron Austin, Viber Audio. Do you need to take that call? All right, so sorry for the break, everybody. We'll edit that. So we were talking about working with directors. You do previs work. I noticed on your IMDb, I did go to IMDb, I did take a look. So you worked post-viz. The most recent thing on here shows Cruella.
Mm-hmm. Oh, wow.
How was that experience working on that film?
I really liked working on that show just because you get to kind of exercise your animation skills in canines, and I had a lot of practice on other shows with canines, so it was fun. It was like doing any kind of animal movies are fun just because it's like an added layer of complexity. You have to create the shot, but you also have to make it look as though it's a real animal.
Yeah.
You have the limitations. You can easily give away that it's a fake animal by bad, you know, animation and bad posing. So.
Well, I got to compliment you then, because if that's the work you did, we just watched it the other day with my wife and our son. And it was fantastic.
I like that movie, actually. That was good.
Should I tell you my favorite shot? My favorite shot what I did was it was a little chihuahua with the eye patch, Wink.
Yes.
I had to put a wallet in his mouth, and I had to make him go along the bus, down the bus steps, drop the wallet into the umbrella.
Yeah.
Go off. But that was a complex shot because it's a moving camera following, going down the stairs, and
cool. It was,
that was a doozy.
Because it wonder if that was real or not. I was like,
that was fake. Fake.
What?
The entire scene?
Fake. Yeah.
Wow. That's amazing, dude.
That's great work.
Even my rough looks pretty real. Like when people, if you squint, it's like it looks real, and if you don't, you can see the seams. But there was another scene that I really liked that I did with Wink. I had to make a flap. They didn't have one in the set. I had to make a flap for him to jump through. But he had to go along and had a collar in his mouth. He had to hook it over. They said, hook the collar over the handle of the door and then jump off with the collar in his mouth and open the door by, you know, weight. Like, really? But that turned out pretty good shot as well. It turned out pretty good shot. So
Right. But, well, it's great work. Great work. What has been your favorite? You know, speaking of those are your favorite shots. What has been your favorite project that you've worked on?
Oh, good question.
I'd have to put Warhorse up there because Warhorse was just, you know, I've worked for Spielberg before, but that was working with him, which is, I can't emphasize how creatively inspired I was as a result of that. And it was like 4 months of heaven just working, you know, and having to go up to his office and show him the latest and
wow,
sitting on the same table as Spielberg and discussing movies. It's just like you're hoping to like absorb like a sponge as much as that knowledge as you can. But
now I've heard several people say that they believe Spielberg is the greatest filmmaker of our generations. I mean, the last 100 years.
He just doesn't like. I have a life and I make films, but Spielberg's life is film.
He just lives films.
Yeah. Wow. I remember I was in his office and we were waiting around because he had a phone call. So just waiting around. And there was a sled in a Perspex box, Rosebud. I'm like, no way. That's not from Citizen Kane, is it?
Right.
And it was the sled from Citizen Kane.
Oh, wow.
In a Perspex box.
Rosebud.
Like, oh, my God. It was incredible. Incredible just working with the man. He can't draw for anything. He would draw a picture of Joey the horse. And it literally would be like a sock with an eye. But then he'd put on there like, I don't know, it'd be like this. So a sock with an eye. But he'd put 100mm lens. And I'd be like, really? That high? And I put a 100mm lens and it just looked perfect. Oh,
yeah, wow.
Big lenses.
So he can't draw it, but he knows what he wants.
He knows exactly what he wants. Wow. And it was great working with him. We worked on a shot that we tried to make work. And I'm sure I could have got it to work had I just given him a bit more time to try it out. But he wanted this zoetrope effect. And the idea was that you're looking through the iron sights of a Gatling gun, and he wanted to dampen any kind of gore factor. But it's a horrific, tragic cavalry charge, you know. It's the very last cavalry charge in history because that was the advent of the Gatling gun. They'd never seen the Gatling gun before that charge.
Right.
So he wanted, and all the Gatling guns were under the tree, in the tree line hidden, so they didn't see it until they were on top of it. But he wanted darkness, you know, from the forest, from the canopy. And so there's a slim window of light from looking out where the forest ended and it was filled. And in comes these silhouetted horsemen. And he wanted the muzzle flashes to act like a zoetrope, to act like a shutter. So you saw boom, 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 boom. You saw them like fall off the horse in silhouette. So it's all done really tastefully, but it's horrific because it's guys being killed.
Right, sure. Sure.
And just working with him on that was just, I wish we'd got it to work. We almost got it to work, but it didn't make it to the movie.
Wow.
But it was just amazing. I was working on a shot. I really loved this shot, but it was a shot that I had. It was a dolly shot. It was dollying back through the trench. And you see Joey the horse jump over the trench and then start running alongside the trench and we're dolling. He's running. Then he tries to jump over the trench again, fails, falls into the trench, rights himself, runs along the trench, up to camera and past camera and out. So I'm working at this shot, complex shot.
Sounds like it.
Yeah.
So we worked out that it was a real horse jumping, Then we had to, they were going to have to switch to a mechanical horse. So the mechanical horse or the fake horse falls into the trench, rights itself, and then it becomes a real horse again. But when I was dollying back for the part where the horse runs past, for the whip pan, and suddenly I went into the ground because I'm in a virtual set, so you can go through walls.
Right.
So
okay.
Just like in a video game.
Sure.
I went into the ground. I'm like, oh, shit. I said, I had to go to him and say, sorry, Mr. Spielberg. We can't get that shot because there's not enough room to back the camera to get that, to allow the horse past. He goes, well, just here's the blueprint. Just here's a marker. You draw up a dugout that will accommodate your camera. So I drew this kind of dugout on the blueprint. He phoned up Surrey in England where they were making the set. He goes, well, can I just fax you over this change? And so he faxed over this change that I'd drawn up, dugout, and they made this dugout to accommodate the camera. So we built it into a virtual set, the same dugout, and we got the shot. And,
That's
when
cool.
They were showing trailers. So.
Wow.
It's great that he has that much influence. Like, he just could pick up the phone, call England, okay, get this done.
Well, that's Spielberg.
Spielberg. Amazing guy. Amazing guy.
Very cool. So, okay, so working on Warhorse was one of your favorites. Now, I'm not going to ask you what your worst was, because I don't want to throw anybody under the bus, kind of.
I can't think of one, actually, for the worst.
Nice answer.
Yeah, good answer. I like that.
Very nice. Cool.
Wow. There's not one that stands out as a bad.
In all openness, I'm just being silly about the whole thing, but I am impressed and amazed at your ability. You know, here's the thing. Here we're talking about Star Wars, and I was telling Mike this in our small break there, is that, you know, just like we had talked with Alan Fling, who was in the Stormtrooper, costume, and he was also in, you know, the Return of the Jedi and some other, you know, very small parts. But yet his whole world, was not his world. His world was
costume
design and stuff, and he's a hoot. And same thing here. Yes, you're in Boba Fett. We love Boba Fett. And it's been fabulous to talk with you. But I have enjoyed this whole discussion about your pre-viz, post-viz, your VFX, you know, work, and just how incredible it is. Plus, you're a hoot to talk to as well. So,
well, I'll take that. I won't set off my thermal detonator in that case.
Right.
Oh, he's got a thermal detonator. Nice.
Very cool. You've worked with Spielberg. I noticed also there's Poltergeist. You worked on Poltergeist.
Oh, wow.
That was fun.
Yeah, with Spielberg.
Wasn't Spielberg, actually. That was the new Poltergeist.
Oh,
I was too young to work on.
Yeah, I was gonna say. I think you and we are about the same age. So
I'm 55.
Okay, yeah, and I'm 50, and Steven's 50. So
a month ago. So we're all right there. So okay, right. The new Poltergeist.
That would be pretty impressive if you worked on the original Poltergeist.
I mean, I love the original.
Oh, sure. Yeah.
I loved it. I loved anything Spielberg. You know, it doesn't matter if it's horror or fantasy. It's ate that stuff up. And so did my family. So always being a big Spielberg fan. So.
Oh, he's done some amazing films. Yeah. He's like the king.
he is incredible. So I just want to talk about your visual effects, because what's funny is on your IMDb page, actor, 2 credits. Visual effects, 39 credits for visual effects. So I just mentioned Cruella, the one and only Ivan, The Call of the Wild, Noelle, Men in Black International, Godzilla, King of Monsters, Pokemon Detective Pikachu, Goosebumps 2, Haunted Halloween, The Predator, that's the 2018 Predator, Ready Player One, which that was great. Max Steel, Ben-Hur, Star Trek Beyond, which I enjoyed that. Jungle Book, that's 2016. In the Heart of the Sea, Goosebumps, San Andreas, Poltergeist, Unbroken. I cannot pronounce this one. Is it Nezha?
Nezha. Chinese.
Okay.
Oh, wow.
Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles, Edge of Tomorrow, X-Men Days of Future Past, 300, Rise of the Empire. That was good, too. Thor, The Dark World, Secret Life of Walter Mitty. That's 2013. I enjoyed that film. I love film. Oblivion, Jack the Giant Slayer. Like, I've seen almost every single one of these. Oz the Great and Powerful. Despicable Me, Minion Mayhem, The Avengers, Battleship, Journey 2, War Horse, Arthur Christmas, Conan the Barbarian, that is the 2011 version, Smurfs, G-Force, and then Star Wars for A New Hope.
Whoa, wait. G-Force? Like
The Guinea Pig.
Like
the Guinea Pig one.
Okay.
Not
sorry.
Not G-Force, Battle of the Planet.
Oh, no. I was going
to...
Oh my.
No, I thought when they said they need an animator for G-Force at Sony, and I'm like, oh man, I love G-Force. And they got there, and it was Guinea Pigs. I'm like,
you're like, that's not G-Force.
They never even gave me a credit. So if they hadn't given me credit and it had been Battle of the Planets, I would have been mad.
Well, they're recently. Well, I shouldn't say recently. I guess about 6 years ago. They did do a Japanese live action G4.
They
did. I've been trying to get a copy of it because I'd love to see it. There's some clips of it on YouTube and stuff. But yeah, I would absolutely. And so when he said that, that's what I thought you worked on. And I was freaking out because I love Battle of the Planets.
Yeah.
Nice.
No, I wish.
I wish you did too.
Right. I mean, obviously, an impressive list. Of work, which is fascinating. And I appreciate you telling the story about Cruella because we, as I said, we just watched it. So I know exactly what scenes you're talking about. And that's just work. Fantastic work.
Thank you.
Wow. So what have you liked? I got to go back to No Disintegrations because we're going to post this just for our listeners and stuff. So, you know, we're going to post this on our Facebook page, the link to not only your YouTube channel, but specifically the No Disintegrations because they are
They're so funny. I love them.
For those that may not know, it's you in the suit, the Boba Fett. And it's some of these are where, you know, there's a memo that came through and you're talking to somebody else about the memo or you're saying like my favorite one so far has been the always wear your armor.
Yeah, by the way, you're not wearing your armor.
It's in the wash.
But you're supposed to be wearing the alternate. That's what you said. Always wear.
Yeah.
I paid attention.
What led you to the idea of No Disintegrations and are there going to be more?
It wasn't my idea. There always was a No Disintegrations version on the Boba Fett Fan Club. It was a Flash animated series.
Okay.
There's a guy in Australia with an Australian accent, and he kind of did this kind of funny thing with Boba Fett making transmissions from Slave One. Uh-huh. It was all Flash animation. So I don't know how many of those he made, but I guess there were a fair number that they got a small kind of following because they were kind of funny, kind of, you know.
And you do the voice pretty well too.
Oh, thank you.
You're welcome.
There's a story about that as well.
Okay.
2016, I get a call from Aaron Proctor, the guy who runs the Boba Fett Fan Club, FFC. He says, I'd love to meet you for margaritas and have a proposition to discuss. So
you hear that, Stephen? Boba Fett and I have something else in common. We like margaritas, tequila guy.
We went for margaritas and, margaritas are more or less a yes. Go in. But, he said, he told me about that Flash animated series, which I knew. And he said, we're thinking of doing a live action version of it. And it's the same writer, same guy who's going to write them. They're going to be a bit more wordy. Because like some of those episodes are like 4 or 5 pages. I'm like, really? Boba Fett's going to talk this much? And so he said, you know, there's a big discussion about the voice. And I said, well, Boba Fett doesn't really talk this much. You know, this isn't Boba Fett. So should we, how should we do it? I don't think we should take it too seriously because it's not Boba Fett.
Right.
How about, and it is a lot to say, what should we do? He goes, well, let's do 3 tests. So we did a recording of 3 tests. We did one, which was me trying to be Jason Wingreen. There was one that was me trying to be Tamura.
Okay.
And there's me just being me, kind of like, just a kind of gravelly voice. And we recorded them and we sent them out to, well, he sent them out, Aaron did, to his people to kind of like, you know, get some feedback. And unanimously, they just said the ones are funniest, you know. So you doing the gravity voice is the funniest. Because you can put, because Boba Fett is very monotone.
Right.
You know? He doesn't, you know, mm-hmm. I want my armor. You got my armor, you know. It's very, very one pitch. And this was kind of, you know, it's very conversational. So that's why they opted for the third voice. So we weren't trying to, you know, we weren't trying to like try and be exactly Boba Fett. It was just, you know, a spin-off, a tongue-in-cheek.
Sure, like, yeah, sure.
And yeah, it worked. I thought it worked. But some people did complain. You know, you always get people who hate.
I know.
We hate that voice. Why can't you do the voice? Like, why can't you just keep your opinion?
Right.
The recreationally outraged.
You should do.
Joe Rogan came up with that.
Joe Rogan did that.
Yeah, recreationally outraged people.
Nice. You should do a video, a Boba Fett video, addressing the haters.
Yeah, I could.
I would love it.
I devote zero energy to them.
You know, I understand. Yeah, and don't
you always get those ones that do kind of penetrate and mess up your whole day.
Right.
You know. Yeah. Especially kind of with that recent stuff with the Slave One.
Oh right. My gosh!
A lot of backlash for that, and I was like, "Why am I getting backlash for expressing my opinion?"
Yep.
Like you asked me my opinion, I gave it, and you'll give me backlash for being honest. It's
because
when should we be penalized for being honest?
Because right. they only want the answer if it agrees they with
want,
them.
Yeah.
Right.
They want their exactly. answer. But I find that the people that are upset. The people that are saying, you know, there's too much CG. I agree, too much CG. Now we've gone back to practical. There's a guy in the back of the plate. It's like, what do you want? Do you want practical with a few slip-ups? You know, stormtroopers hitting their heads. I personally love that stuff.
I do too.
I personally love all guy in the back with the jeans on. I don't care. It's fun, you know?
Okay, that's interesting that you bring that up, the complaint about too much CG. Because I've said that in the past about the prequels, that there's mm-hmm. too much CG. Although I think the prequels have aged well. I still really enjoy the prequels a lot. In fact, I like the prequels better than I do the sequels.
I do.
But and there's a lot of complaints about the special editions. Some of them I think are warranted, and some of them I don't. For instance. The scene you're in, okay, that gets a lot of complaints from people, and most of it's around Jabba. Mm-hmm. I remember when that came out, I was super excited that scene was put in, because I remember watching it. Steven and I both bought a special edition CD-ROM that it came out, a Lucasfilms thing, and it had some of the cut scenes from the original Star Wars, and that was one of them. Mm-hmm. And I always loved that scene. I thought it was incredible. So when I heard that it was going to be in the special edition, I was super excited. In fact, when you walked on the screen, I literally cheered in the theater. I was like, yes, Boba Fett!
I was there at the premiere at Man's Chinese Theater.
Ooh.
And the whole theater just went crazy. Yeah. It was like, oh my God,
that's awesome.
It made me happy.
Yeah. But I mean, I don't get it when people complain about this. I mean, I get the angst with Jabba the Hutt, because yeah, that it never quite felt like Jabba.
Well, even at the time I was pushing, I was like, you know, this obviously isn't working. I said, why is it completely unrealistic to bring back the puppet or do a puppet version again? You know, I think it would be as expensive,
right?
Probably a little bit more, but right. you're gonna have a realistic Jabba, because Jabba in Jedi was as real as Mark Hamill as Carrie Fisher.
But hadn't the puppet deteriorated so much?
So they would have to make it.
Right. So you're looking at the cost of physically building the puppet versus the cost of virtually. Right.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But the thing is that the virtual hadn't evolved to the point that they could, that now it has.
Sure.
Now it has. I'd say since about 2015, 16, the technology has gone to a point where, because when that's when Jungle Book kind of proved we can make realistic animals that talk, you know.
Right.
Because when I first saw Bagheera on like my first day on Jungle Book, they showed me the Bagheera test.
Oh my goodness.
And wow. I was like, oh my God, I thought that was a real panther. And then it starts talking. And right. That was the test.
And you know,
that raised the bar. Okay, we've got to meet this now.
My family and I we are fans of the Jungle Book. In fact, when my daughter was growing, my daughter's 24 now, but when she was growing up, Jungle Book was one of her favorites. And the animated one, we would watch that. Right, we would watch that over and over again. Yeah. We loved it. So when the film came out, I had my hesitations. I'm like, how is this going to work? I don't. And then I saw it, and I'm like, wow. This is incredible. I was blown away by it. So, yeah, that was great work.
That was such a fun show to work on. My first job to work on, Jon Favreau came along and said, okay, I'd like you to spend 3 days choreographing the fight between Shikhan and Baloo. But I had 3 days to kind of – well, I spent the first day just looking at animal footage. It's horrible to watch tigers and lions and bears fighting each other.
Oh my.
It's not the most pleasant study. But you know, I worked out what exactly each could do in the time and ran it by my boss Dwayne, and he said, yeah, let's do this. So I spent 3 days doing it, and Jon Favreau approved it. It's the only time I've ever done something that complex and it not have a change. Like, that never happens in my business.
Right.
You know, because there's the ability to change with a computer, people can't resist that ability. They can't resist dabbling. They can't resist trying something out. And that's where that too much. I think.
Do you think that.
What we were saying before.
Do you think that's why George. Do you think that's why George Lucas likes to, or well, did like to tamper with his stuff? That, you know, it's a lot easier now?
No, the reason was he had this idea, like you said, he was going to do the prequels and he was going to do them with the new digital effects tools kit he had available. So he was imagining releasing episode one, amazing effects, episode two, even more amazing effects, episode three, unbelievably amazing effects, episode four, 1970s optical effects. So he was only ever going to make one special edition. That was New Hope. There wasn't ever going to be a Jedi or Empire.
Wow.
And so I had no knowledge that. That's why I left. I thought, my job's done. They weren't going to make any other special editions.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Disney were calling and making some attractive offers for some projects. And so I upped and left. But he was worried that he wanted to beef up New Hope so it wasn't such a drop between three and four. But the thing is that I think in making the prequels, he realized that you can take it too far and that to completely abandon practical effects is a mistake. You know, he's made some mistakes. You know, I wasn't involved in the Greedo scene. I didn't know that it actually existed until I went to see it on that opening night, because they made that change after I'd left.
Now that is a change I absolutely hate.
I absolutely hate too.
Yeah.
And there are some things that I had to work on that I absolutely hate. There was a scene that it was a very easy scene. It was just another one of the Ronto scenes, and it was a Ronto going through a square and a speeder weaving through, and that was it. And I had it.
I remember that.
Done. Yeah. Well, it was originally just a walk-in Ronto and a speeder. And it was done. And it was an establishing shot. It worked perfectly well. And I had it in dailies, and I was expecting a big check mark, like I can cross this one off. Like, approved, you know. about to strike it through. And George was like, why is there nobody leading that Ronto like there are in the other shots? And I said, well, there's nobody in the plate to have him follow.
Right. Huh.
Well, can we have a rider on the back of it? Sure. We only have stormtroopers, though. Do we have any Jawas? No. But and it was yes men. But we can make them, sir. But we can make them. You know, all the yes men.
Right.
Entourage.
Uh-huh. Right.
Okay, let's have a Jawa. Let's have a Jawa ride in the Dubak, sorry, the Ronto. And actually, let's have it react to the speed that it goes past. Let's have a connection there. Okay. I'm going back into the shotgun. Okay.
He's just trying to show off the effects at this point.
It didn't end there. He's like, let's have a ride and I know. Let's have it rear up like a horse. I'm like, oh my god. Like, what? Really? It's an establishing shot. It's a shot that. Its purpose is not to bring attention to anything other than say, this is where the following scenes take place. So he was making, usually you avoid business, what we call business. It's usually a very boring shot. It's like life on a general day.
Right.
So right. Suddenly he had this thing rearing up. He goes, have this thing rearing up. I'm like, oh, God. So he goes, right. I know. Let's have two Jawas. When it rears up, one falls off the back. It's a big dust plume as he hits the floor. Oh, God, really? Okay, let's do that. Oh, no. And when that happens, the other one, he falls off the front. He's hanging. He's like swinging around underneath it. I'm like, really? I can't turn around to George Lucas and say, that sucks. I mean, I could, but wouldn't my career.
Right, you wouldn't be working.
There wouldn't be any IMDb list right. under my name. There'd be like two movies, maybe. So, you know, a lot of people give me so much crap as though it's my fault that they
right.
make special editions. Like, I wish I had that kind of Hollywood power. Right. I really wish I did.
Yeah.
But I don't, you know, and if I didn't do it, they would have gotten someone else to do it. So it's not like, you know, I could have, you know, changed history in any way. George was wanting to see this version. And a lot of the time you could show him a version that was ridiculous. And once he sees it, he's like, yeah, you know what? Yeah, it's too busy.
Right.
And so I was hoping that would happen. But everything got approved, and they used it for a lot of the advertising.
Right, I remember that.
They showed it all over the place. And I'm like, oh, why that scene? Why can't they do a scene I'm really proud of? Like, I was really proud of the scene. It was a throwaway scene. It was just R2 and 3PO outside the cantina, a couple of stormtroopers talking to a guy, and they said, we want to do that behind the stormtroopers, and you have the Dubak kind of interacting a bit, like I had him sniffing the backpack of the stormtrooper, the sand trooper. And then they said, oh, put another guy on, fake guy, stormtrooper, on the back of Dubak and have him dismounted. Great, I'll do that. So when they shot some reference, I got the Tom Kennedy, the producer. Uh-huh. I said, do you mind climbing up a step ladder and jumping off just for reference? And so we got some reference of him doing that, and I used that. But I had the stormtrooper like putting his foot on the back of the elbow and the knee to get down off this Dubak. But that, we showed that to George, and he was like, where'd you get the live action reference? Where'd you get the live action trooper from? And I said, well, actually, it's animated. It's hand animated. He's like, no. I was like, yes. I fooled Mr. Lucas.
Nice.
Yes.
Oh, I love it. I love it.
But why can't they use a scene like that? They use that horrible Ronto scene, which horrible. It as a filmmaker, you just wouldn't use it as an establishing shot. It's too, it's like there's too much action. It's a right. spectacle in itself. So there's stuff that I've done that I wish I wasn't in there. But
sure. But you have no control over that. You're the guy that has to do the work.
This is my second movie. Before doing movies, I was in England as a 2D animator in pencil and paper animation
right.
for commercials. So If you were English, I could tell you the commercials. You remember them. The well-known popular commercials. But on commercials, you don't get credits.
Right.
So moving into movies, like, oh, finally, someone will actually know. Everyone knows my work in England. They just don't know I did it.
Right, exactly.
Everyone knows the jingles. They're singing the tunes to the commercials I've worked on. But nobody knows. I can't prove that I had anything to do with them. Because
sure. Credits. Wow. Neat.
Now I'm in movies. Like, yes, finally get credit.
Right. People know what I did.
Wow.
I get to be on IMDb.
IMDb.
Right.
Wow. Oh, those are great stories.
I did a quick I mentioned earlier that I had a story about your Han and Carbonite.
Oh, yeah.
I was at the London Film and Comic Con in 2017. And like my booth where I'm signing is between Jeremy Bullock and Alan Harris.
Oh, nice.
And the next one down was Dickie Beer. So just being with Jeremy and Alan Harris was just like, you know, all day was just joy. You know, I can't actually, I didn't ever put anyone up anywhere near Jeremy except Alan Harris. Alan Harris, I don't know if you ever met him, but he is with Jeremy up there. So they have what they booked photo op. You know, have a photo op with four Boba Fetts.
Nice.
So they had this whole setup. They had the Han and Carbonite, and they wanted two Boba Fetts this side, two Boba Fetts this side, and the person in the middle having their picture taken with four Boba Fetts.
Awesome.
So they said, okay, we want Jeremy and Dickie over here, and we have Mark and Alan over here. So I go over, and Alan said, how do you want to play this? Sorry. He said, how do you want to play this? Do you want to play as friendly or like formal like those guys? And that was Jeremy and Dickie were like over there with their hands. He goes, I said, listen, let's be friendly. So we put our arms around each other like for the picture. And he's waiting there for the photos. And he said, he goes, you know, that's me, don't you? And I said, what? Harrison Ford? And he goes, no, the body of Han and Carbonite is me.
Oh, really?
Like, you are kidding me. He goes, no. He goes, Harrison didn't want to turn up for the whole day for his body. He hated it just for the face casting. He wasn't going to come back for a body. So that's Alan Harris, Bosk, or prototype Boba Fett, as the body of Han and Carbonite.
Oh,
and it came from
wow.
the horse's mouth. It wasn't like from anybody else. It was from the guy himself. That's, oh, my God.
I never knew that. That
oh. I never knew that until he told me.
Wow. Neat. Yeah. Holy cow.
Alan Harris's body.
I always thought that was Harrison Ford. You know,
I did.
Wow. But now that you say that, that makes sense. Yeah, I can't see Harrison being like, yeah, you're going to. Yeah, I'm not showing up for that.
When they had this one of him, when he melts, you know, he just had to imitate Alan's pose
right.
for the CG effects and then collapse out of it.
Wow.
But that
Neat.
Was as much as he did for that Han and Carbonite.
Oh, pose. Great story. Awesome.
That is interesting.
Wow.
Yeah.
Dang, you just blew my mind.
It blew my mind. We were having this photo op, and all I could think was like, oh, my God. And, you know,
wow.
Yeah. That was the last time, actually. I'm so glad that I have those memories, because that was the last time I saw both those guys. So.
Right, yeah. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's sad that we lost Jeremy.
Yeah. And Alan the same year.
Yeah, right.
Alan, wow. Jeremy, and David all in the same year.
Dang.
Gosh, I didn't realize that it was all in that year.
One year, it's all that 2020.
Yeah, dang. Mm.
I will say this. One of the great things about Star Wars is the community. Just the community of folks like yourself, but also, I mean, our friends, you know, that we have that love Star Wars, but hearing the stories of the folks that were there, the guys who worked, I mean, let me rephrase that. That didn't sound right. The people who are working on the movies,
right.
the the behind the scenes guys, the thing. There's just a camaraderie that seems to happen. And it is neat to see pictures from Comic Cons where a lot of folks get together and they're like, hey, you know, great to see you again. I mean, it's just a neat community. It just seems like a really positive community when people are. Not the comment section. I'm not talking about comments. That's not what I'm talking about.
But that's what I was telling you earlier about having this. I never, you know, all I, as a, when this whole process of being in the suit, the story that I told you earlier, when all that was happening, that's as far as I could see forward. That was my short sightedness. I could just see, oh my God, I'm going to be in the suit. I never foresaw any follow-up.
Sure.
And actually, for the first 20 years, almost 20 years, nobody knew that I was in that suit. Like, between 1994 and 2014, nobody really knew anything about me being in the suit. It was only when I jumped onto Twitter in 2015 and started having a voice that, you know, started broadcast in a bit more,
right.
People started taking notice, and then I started getting asked to do podcasts and stuff like that. But between 1994 and 2014, it was like I knew I was Boba Fett, and my family knew I was Boba Fett, but that was it.
Wow. I gotta admit, when I saw it, I thought it was just Jeremy Bullock. I had no idea that.
And I did my homework. I watched how he walked in, how he walked in Empire, and I was hoping to turn the corner so I could do that, but I think that was John Morton did that.
Well, you got that moment of breaking the fourth wall where you stare at the camera. That
I wasn't even staring at the camera, you know.
It looks like it when you watch it.
It does look like it, but okay, you have to mention it from my point of view. I'm on the set. I can't see through the camera, so you're relying on the director, which was in this case Steve Williams, to tell you how far to turn, so he'd already. I held the blaster, and I said I had 8 hours practice, so I was comfortable holding that Jedi blaster. He said, "Can you crank the blaster around to your left? Further. Yeah, hold it there. Like, really, this?" He goes, "Now walk forward casually." I like this. He's like, "Yeah." And so the first shot was, I thought it must look awful because it felt awkward. But I see it was a better silhouette on the gun. I get it. On the second shot, which is the afternoon shoot, he said, you know, when you get to your middle mark, you have to stop. You have to scan, make sure the docking bay is clear. And then exit over this way. So now I'm in the helmet. I'm looking like this, but the T visor lining straight up to camera. And so I can't tell this. Only people flying the camera can tell me this. And so George, no one ever pointed this out. I was completely unaware of it. And then when I went to see the dailies on that Friday, this was, I think, like Tuesday or something, I think the 6th of December was. I went to see the dailies on the Friday, and that was the first time I got to see a rough comp of me in the play, which was amazing. But then, George loved that. That was take 11, and George loved it because it looked like I was mugging the camera.
Nice.
So, but I really wasn't. But the fact that it looks like I was is okay.
Yeah, it does. it really does. It looks like you've just broke the fourth wall. It's like, holy crap, Boba Fett's looking at me. I love it. Awesome. This is
great. Great. Well, we got to start wrapping up. Do you believe how long? Oh, my goodness. This has been a great conversation. Thank you, Mark. Thank you so much.
Well, I can always come back for part two, you know.
Oh, we would absolutely love to have you back, Mark.
There's plenty more movies to talk about.
Yeah, absolutely. Oh, my goodness. I can only imagine all the fun stories that we may hear. Oh, my goodness. Well, Mark, thank you so much for being with us. This has been fabulous. It's been fun. Love the stories. Again, I just want to remind everybody who's listening, the best place to find you would be, you said, your YouTube channel, and to check that out. And then also, and we're going to put links on our Facebook page for that. So yep. for everybody, do that. And then where else can we find you? All of a sudden, I'm having a, I didn't take a note. Usually I take notes and I almost forget.
You can find me on Twitter, on Instagram, on Facebook, either under Mark Hansen, Mark Austin, or Boba Fett ANHSE, A New Hope Special Edition.
Yeah, A New Hope Special Edition. Yeah,
yeah, definitely go check out the YouTube videos. The No Disintegration videos are fantastic. Oh, what's this?
Oh, there it is.
Oh, nice. He's holding up a card. With him in the Fett costume. Yeah, I like that. Very cool.
Both the NHSE.
Nice.
It's a mouthful. Oh, and I'll show you this as well. I got this recently. But it's that scene.
Oh, yes.
And you can turn the little wheel. And you get the different versions of Jabba, because like, you got the other older version.
Oh, that's so cool.
And you even got...
Oh, even the original Jabba. Yeah,
you can have all three.
Nice.
That's fun.
I saw this pin, and I imagined it like this. They arrived. It's double the size I thought it was going to be.
Okay, one more thing. Okay.
Yeah.
That, because that just reminded me. One of the things that people complain about that scene, and I like, actually, is they're all like, well, it doesn't make any sense that Han says, "You're a decent human being, Jabba." And then walks off. Yeah. And I'm like,
I thought it was sarcasm.
Yeah, that's what I look at it as. I'm like, it's great sarcasm. And it's so Han Solo, you know?
Yeah.
I'm like, how can you not like that? Anyway, I just had to throw that in.
I think true fans, true Star Wars fans are more forgiving of things like that, in my opinion. I think that shows your fandom, you know.
I agree.
How big a fan you are. If you're, you know, I love the fact that the stormtrooper hits his head on the
I do too.
Floor. I was worried that that was going to be one of the fixes that we was going to get. I was like, no, please leave. Don't touch that. Don't touch that.
Leave that in.
Yeah. All that stuff is amazing. Like when the interrogation droid comes in at Princess Leia, and you almost see the lettering for like London Hospital on the needle. You almost see, it's almost legible right towards the end of the shot. Right. And did you know that actually the interrogation droid is a black R2-D2 dome?
Oh, wow. I didn't know that.
Yeah. Cool. Yeah, another piece of trivia.
Nice.
Love it.
Oh, we might have to pull some of these for some Two Geeks trivia then. Nice. Very cool. All right.
Well, Mark, again, thank you so much for joining us. It's been a pleasure. We cannot wait to have you back again.
Yes.
Oh, my goodness. This was fabulous. So, all right. Well, Mike, you want to sign us out?
All right. Well, thank you again, Mark. We really appreciate having you. We do look forward to you coming back. This was an absolute blast.
I will. I'll be back.
Awesome. All right. With that said, I'll take us out of here. Over and out, and may the Force be with you. Thank you for joining us today on the Two Geeks and a Microphone podcast. Tune in next week when we will have more news and reviews. Until then,